Listening to the English language news of Kan, the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation. It's 8 p.m. in Israel, Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. In the headlines, Hezbollah drone and missile strike in northern Israel wounds 18 Israelis, including 14 soldiers and 4 civilians. Prime Minister tells visiting foreign ministers from Europe, urging restraint against responding to Iran. Thanks for the advice, but Israel would make its own decisions. The cabinet approves a 19 billion shekel plan to rebuild communities in the Gaza periphery. Defense Minister Gallant says that Iranian terror is attempting to reach Judea and Samaria, and the weather much cooler and hazy. Good evening. This is Ariel O'Sullivan with the news. On day 194 of the war, in the north, at least 18 people were wounded this afternoon when an explosive-laden drone and an anti-tank missile fired by Hezbollah scored a direct hit on a building in the frontier town of Arab el-Aramshe. The strike was on a community center in the town that was being used by the IDF. Among the injured were 14 IDF soldiers and 4 civilian members of the local emergency squad. One soldier was reported to be in critical condition. 5 are in serious condition, 2 are in moderate condition, and the rest of the injured in the incident suffered light wounds. The families have been notified. Lebanese media outlets are reporting an Israeli airstrike in the northeastern Lebanon Baalbek district after this strike in Israel. The strike was reported near the town of La'at. Footage posted on social media shows smoke rising from the targeted site. Some 10 rockets were fired this morning from South Lebanon at Western and Upper Galilee communities. They all fell in open areas and no injuries were reported. A rocket barrage on Kiryat Shmona last night caused slight damage, but no injuries. The IDF returned fire at the source of the launches. Overnight, Israeli Air Force fighter jets attacked Hezbollah targets in 4 different areas of South Lebanon. 3 terrorists, 2 of them senior commanders in the terror group, were killed in Israeli strikes in South Lebanon. One was the commander of a rocket and missile unit in the western sector, and the other was a commander in the coastline sector. In the Gaza Strip, the IDF said this morning that a fighter in the Israeli Air Force Sheldag special unit was seriously wounded in battle in the northern Gaza Strip yesterday. His family has been notified. Head of the community and a member of the emergency squad in the northern town of Arab el-Aramshe, Adiv Mazal, told Khan that as long as Israel defends itself and does not attack, it is impossible to protect the residents who return to the northern border due to the lack of financial support for them from the state. He said this is the economically weakened population in the north. The government left them in hotels without any response. They were fed up and they returned to live or die with dignity rather than live overcrowded in some evacuation center. The only one to blame for what is happening is the government and no one else, according to Adiv Mazal. Meanwhile, the IDF said that the injury of the 4 IDF soldiers yesterday in Lebanon was caused by a missile and not an explosive device that the Hezbollah had planted on the border. The injured soldiers were from the Golani Reconnaissance Unit and a soldier from the Combat Engineers. Israel's response to the Iran attack. The foreign ministers of Germany and Britain are in the country and met with the prime minister to show support for Israel. The 2 ministers, Germany's Annalena Baerbock and Britain's David Cameron, came here also to urge against the escalation after Iran's Saturday night drone and missile attack on Israel. The 2 ministers also met with their Israeli counterpart, Yisrael Katz, who said Israel has a full right to respond to Iran's attack. An Israeli source told Khan that the political echelon has made a decision on the nature of the Israeli counterstrike and now is waiting for the right moment. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he appreciated the international support in defending Israel from Iran's attack this week, but stated that Israel would make its own decisions. They, world leaders, have also all types of suggestions and advice, Netanyahu said. I appreciate it, but I want to make clear that we will make our own decisions and the state of Israel would do all that it needed to defend itself. He made these comments in the cabinet today. Earlier, President Isaac Herzog met with the 2 foreign ministers from Germany and Britain, and thanked the 2 countries for their strong stand alongside Israel in the face of what Herzog called the reprehensible attack by Iran. The whole world must work decisively and defiantly against the threat posed by the Iranian regime, which is seeking to undermine the stability of the whole region, Herzog said. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron told reporters later that it's clear Israel is making a decision to act after the Iranian attack, and the hope is that it does not do so in ways as little to escalate the situation as possible.
It's clear the Israelis are making a decision to act. We hope they do so in a way that does as little to escalate this as possible, and in a way that, as I said yesterday, is smart as well as tough. But the real need is to refocus back on Hamas, back on the hostages, back on getting the aid in, back on getting a pause in the conflict in Gaza. That's why I'm here today, to talk to the Israeli government, to talk to the Palestinian Authority, to try and push those things forward. Well, we want to see coordinated sanctions against Iran. Britain has in many ways led the way with our new sanctions regime, sanctioning dozens of people in Iran, sanctioning the IRGC in its entirety. And I think there's more that we can do to show united front that Iran is behind so much of the malign activity in this region, backing Hamas, backing Hezbollah, backing the Houthis. They need to be given a clear and unequivocal message by the G7, and I hope that will happen at the meeting.
British Foreign Secretary David Cameron. The chair of the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, Likud Knesset member Yuli Edelstein, says that when Israel responds to the unprecedented weekend Iranian drone and missile salvos against it, the aim will be to send a message of deterrence to Tehran while drawing a line under the round of hostilities. Edelstein made the remarks in an interview with Reuters.
One thing has to be clear. After the brutal attack, coming straight from Iranian territory into the state of Israel, with all the respect to the fact that we managed to protect ourselves, defend ourselves, thanks to our IDF and to our Air Force, we can't pretend that it will pass unnoticed. We'll have to react. Iranians will know that we reacted, and I sincerely hope that it will teach them a lesson that you can't attack a sovereign country just because you find it doable. Different options are on the table. They've been presented to the War Cabinet. They've been discussed. And as I've said, the moment the retaliation will come, it will be quite clear to the Iranians and the rest of the world that Israel will continue defending itself whenever necessary from whatever aggressor will be facing. We are calculating the possible responses from the Iranian side. We are listening very carefully and with a lot of attention to the messages and advice we are getting from our allies, who were very instrumental in helping us to defend ourselves from the Iranian missiles and drones. Having said all that, I think I won't surprise you if I'll tell you that the most important task of any democratically elected leadership, including that of Israel, is to protect its own citizens. And we'll act accordingly. We are not in the business of revenge. It's not the question of revenge. It's the question of making it quite clear no one ever will be able to attack Israel without consequences. I sincerely hope that they will understand that it's not in their interest to continue this kind of exchange of blows. We are not interested in a full-scale war. We are not, as I've said, in the business of revenge. We have to make it clear that the Iranians can't decide that now every week they will be able to launch missiles or send drones and it will pass unnoticed. We always take into consideration the international norms, and also, you know, I will say it very loud and clear, we don't have pilots or officers who would purposely decide to shoot on civilians. It just doesn't happen in our army.
Likud Knesset member Yuli Edelstein, chairman of the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee. Iranians are gripped by anxiety as the Ayatollah regime braces for a possible Israeli retaliation for the massive drone, rocket, and missile strike on the country earlier this week. In Iran, the country's already troubled national currency, the rial, has plummeted to record lows. The streets were staked with lines of people attempting to stock up on food and gas. And as Iranians take to the social media to voice concern, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps Intelligence Corps has upped its crackdown on dissidents, calling on the public to report social media profiles that are, quote, hurting national sentiments. Iran again has warned Israel against a counterstrike and said the Iranian response will be strong and clear. In a speech at a military parade in Tehran, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi said Iran's response to the killing of 7 Revolutionary Guard officers in the Iranian consulate in Damascus was limited and targeted sites used by the, quote, Zionist regime to harm Iranian interests. If we were to have retaliated broadly, nothing would have remained of Israel, he said. Here are comments that he made through a translator.
The Iranian military punished and reined in the Israeli regime. This shows Iran's power. Today, the whole world admits that what the Iranian armed forces did with the wise Islamic Revolution leader's prudence was not only a true promise coming true, but also a precise and calculated move. Today, it is being acknowledged by the world leaders. It was an extremely calculated move.
Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi via translator. Washington will, in coming days, impose new sanctions targeting Iran, including its missile and drone program, as well as new sanctions against entities supporting the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and Iran's defense ministry. National Security Advisor in the U.S., Jake Sullivan, said in a statement yesterday that the U.S. anticipates that its allies and partners to soon follow with their own sanctions. In addition, he said that the U.S. continues to work to further strengthen and expand the successful integration of air and missile defenses and early warning systems across the Middle East to further erode the effectiveness of Iran's missile and UAV capabilities. The Trump administration branded the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps as a foreign terrorist organization in 2019, and Israel has urged the EU, the United Kingdom, and other countries to follow suit. Well, the European Union foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, said yesterday that some EU member states have asked for sanctions against Iran to be expanded, and the bloc's diplomatic service will begin working on a proposal targeting Iran's missile and drone program. Russia has called on Israel to exercise restraint and act in a diplomatic sphere in order to avoid dragging the region into an escalation. A Khan reporter says that Russian President Vladimir Putin's national security advisor conveyed this message in a conversation with his Israeli counterpart, Tsachi Hanegbi, that was initiated by the Kremlin. The Khan reporter says that Kremlin made clear that the grave Iranian aggressions must be condemned by the international community. Well, retired Brigadier General Tzvika Chaimovich, a former commander of Israel's air defenses, warned today that contrary to some beliefs, Iran formally declared war on Israel with its attack. Speaking in a briefing for journalists organized by the government, Chaimovich said that the launching of almost 400 threats against Israel was no accident and taken at the highest levels in Tehran. Chaimovich also discussed some of the malfunctions in Iranian missile arsenal.
We are talking about multi-front, multi-directional threat and war. There is no other way to describe or define the situation today that simultaneously Israel dealing with, of course, on the main front with the Hamas in Gaza Strip, on the same time Hezbollah in the north, it's Lebanon and Syria. A few cases from Yemen by the Houthis and a few cases on the same time from Iraq by another Iranian militias. What does it mean? So I'm talking about five, six different directions and players in this situation. All of them, they are the Iranian proxies in the region. Till Sunday, all the proxies Houthis, Yemen, Hezbollah, Hamas, the militias in Iraq and in Syria, they took part in this conflict since October 7th. But on Sunday, we saw something different. First of all, there is no other way to describe the Iranian action on Sunday. Iran declared a war a direct war against Israel. There is no other way to explain almost 400 threats. That's one state launched to other state, and we will describe it as something escalation or campaign or you name it. It is a war. And the fact that Iran chose this very aggressive scenario, that it was more than all, even the severe scenarios that we thought before, it means that Iran, and although that we are talking about one of the most radical regimes all over the world, the fact that they chose this very aggressive scenario, they know what they are doing. It's not by accident. It's not that somebody took a decision. It's all coming from the higher level, the higher leaders in Iran, and top down to the military forces. So the fact that they chose this very aggressive scenario, more than 400 different threats, by three different waves. The first wave was UAVs, 7 hours from Iran to Israel. And then after a few hours, the cruise missiles, they flew 2 to 3 hours. And then last but not least, the long-range missile, they flew 12 minutes. Why I mentioned that? Because they prepared it that they will well coordinated, well simultaneously to attack Israel, plus minutes at the same time. It was 2 a.m. in the morning. So they started with the UAVs, calculate the time, and then sent the cruise missiles. And then the last phase, a few minutes before the 2 a.m., they brought this around plus minus 100 long-range missiles, 1,500 to 1,700 kilometers to the state of Israel. So totally we are talking about very aggressive scenario, almost 400 different type, a variety of types of these threats simultaneously to the state of Israel. So if a state try to bring this huge stuff of threats to another state, there is no other meaning, not to threat you, not to deter you, to attack you and create a huge damage.
Can you say anything about the integrity of the Iranian ballistic missiles? How many manufactured or did not fire or reach their target?
Iran is a superpower in tactical ballistic missiles and UAVs. There is no way to describe Iran in these two sectors. Long-range missiles and UAVs. Look what's happened in Ukraine. The big Russia came to Iran to take hundreds and even more of UAVs and use them in the war against Ukraine. It's meaning a lot. And they're developing a great technology and a great, unfortunately, a great missiles. I heard about the news that 50% or so on of the missile that the Iranians launched on Sunday fell on Iran land. I'm not sure that this is really the number. I can tell you that if I try to look in my experience around Israel, Hezbollah, Hamas, and other players and cases, around 25% of the cases, they are failed cases. So I will not expect that in this state-of-the-art technology, long-range missiles, it will be 40 or 50% failed, but I'm not here to give my score to the Iranians. I saw how many of the 110 crossed the atmosphere and threats directly threat the threat of state of Israel. It says a lot.
Retired Brigadier General Tzvika Chaimovich, who was the former commander of the Israel Air Defenses. More news coming up, but now here's the Air Force troop in its song, Tamid Ole Amangina. The tune always rises.
Min hashaot ve hashniot ve hakolot מבט באוזניות מן הכוכב על המגדל ומן הרוח לצידו והחבר שעל ידו אשר מרים לו אגודל מן האבים הנפתחים ומכנסי המלאכים ומלילות ללא שינה תמיד עולה של העיר והשדות הרחבים וכשהלילה מעליו והשמיים מתחתיו ועל הארץ כוכבים עמוק עמוק בתוך הלב
בתוך הראש המסתובב
מן הקצה מן הפינה
תמיד עולה המנגינה
יכולה מתוך שינה לשמוע את המנגינה וזה הולך ככה לא 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 לא
שעת ומן האופק הלבן ומן הרווח הקטן שבין הנילוס והפרט מה שהיה וכבר נגמר בכל ארצנו הקטנה בשלה את המנגינה
Today unanimously approved a 5-year 19 billion shekel plan to rebuild and strengthen communities near the Gaza border after the October 7th attack by Hamas terrorists. Prime Minister Netanyahu said the state would invest the funds in housing, infrastructure, education, employment, health and medicine. Hamas terrorists wanted to uproot us, but we will uproot them and deepen our roots, he said in a statement. We will build the land of Israel and protect our country. Prime Minister's office said local communities would work with government ministries and along with the business sector and philanthropy to bring the region to a vital, flourishing, and attractive area. It's also reported that as part of the 5-year plan, the state would transfer 200 million shekels to the Sapir Academic College, the most important academic institution in the Western Negev and the largest employer in the region. Meanwhile, the United Nations is appealing for $2.8 billion to provide aid to some 3 million Palestinians. The head of the UN Humanitarian Office for Gaza and the West Bank, Andrea De Domenico, told reporters that massive operations are required to restore sanitation, water, and health facilities, and that it can't be done during military operations. De Domenico blasted Israel for not being allowing enough humanitarian aid into Gaza. Well, Israel's coordinator of government activities in the territories posted on X images of what it said were the contents of 700 aid trucks waiting on the Gaza side of the Kerem Shalom crossing to be picked up by the UN. The post said that Israel scaled up its capabilities to send in aid. All the United Nations had done is to make up excuses. Aid needs to be collected and delivered, the post said. The UN needs to do its job. The hostage release talks. The Prime Minister of Qatar, one of the mediating countries, says contacts on hostage release deals are at a sensitive point. We are making every effort in our ability to overcome the difficulties and bring about an end to the suffering of the Palestinian people in Gaza and the release of the hostages. Israel has dismissed Hamas's claim that it holds fewer than 20 captives who meet the humanitarian criteria for release in the first phase of a ceasefire deal. Sources involved in the negotiations say Hamas holds a large number of hostages it can free. A diplomatic source told Khan that Hamas's Gaza leader, Yahya Sinwar, has made a strategic decision. He does not want a deal. He sees the possibility of a regional escalation and withdrawal of IDF forces from the Gaza Strip and only wants to raise the price. 133 hostages, not all of them are still alive, have been held in Gaza for 194 days. IDF Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Herzia Levy today told recruits to the Kfir and Nahal Brigades that the return of the abductees is a moral mission with moral superiority and that we would like as many recruits as possible from all parts of Israeli society to come and experience being drafted into the IDF, a duty that is also a great privilege to protect the country and be together, he said. Speaking before the new recruits at the Tel HaShomer Induction Center, Levy said that for a fighter in the IDF to fight to create the conditions to return our kidnapped people, our citizens who were kidnapped to enemy territory, this is a noble mission. This is a mission for which each of us is willing to risk his life and is willing to do anything to succeed in this. IDF forces early this morning demolished the Hebron area homes of the two terrorists who carried out a coordinated stabbing and car ramming attack in Ra'anana in the beginning of the year. An Israeli woman was murdered and 18 people were wounded in that attack. The two attackers were apprehended. Israeli security forces operating in Judea and Samaria overnight arrested six Palestinians suspected of involvement in terror activities. And Defense Minister Yoav Gallant said that Iranian terrorism was attempting to spread to Judea and Samaria in order to harm Israeli citizens. He said Iran was trying to smuggle in weapons, explosives, money, and was attempting to direct attacks. Speaking at the site of the murder of the 14-year-old Jewish shepherd boy Benjamin Achimeir last week, Gallant said, "It starts in Tehran, it reaches Beirut, Damascus, here in Judea and Samaria, Gaza. The hands of Iranians, covered in blood, touch everywhere. We will cut off these cruel hands wherever they are. We will protect the citizens of Israel. We will restrain and cripple as much as it takes everywhere. There will be nothing that will prevent us from ensuring that the citizens of Israel are safe," Gallant said. UN Security Council member Algeria has circulated the draft resolution on the Palestinian Authority request for full membership in the United Nations, with the Palestinians reportedly pressing for a Security Council vote as early as Thursday, tomorrow. Reuters reports that the Security Council committee considering the Palestinian membership bid was unable to reach a unanimous decision on whether it meets criteria. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, says she does not see a U.N. resolution recommending the Palestinian Authority become a full member of the U.N., helping lead to a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. She was speaking at a news conference in Seoul last night.
On the recognition issue, I think our position has been clear. President Biden has said categorically that we support a two-state solution for addressing the situation in the Middle East, where Palestinians will have a state of their own and Israel is secure in their state. And we are working on the ground to get to that place as quickly as possible. We do not see that doing a resolution in the Security Council will necessarily get us to a place where we can find a solution, a two-state solution moving forward.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a declarative resolution condemning as anti-Semitic the pro-Palestinian chant, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." The vote was 377 in favor and 44 against. The Competition Commissioner is considering fining the Netto supermarket chain because it violated the food law. Today it was announced that Netto will pay to the Treasury more than 18 million shekels as part of the agreed sanctions. According to the announcement, Netto violated sections of the food law dealing with interference in display areas at retailers and price recommendations for retailers. And in political news, the coalition is reportedly preparing an alternative in the event that Benny Gantz and his National Camp Party withdraw from the coalition in the coming weeks or months. This according to Khan's political reporter Zev Kam, who said senior officials in the coalition told him that it was decided that after Gantz's retirement, Neuhaus party head Gideon Saar would be offered to return to the government and replace Gantz in the war cabinet. Saar resigned from the government a few weeks ago because he did not get a place in the war cabinet, partly due to Gantz's opposition and the fear that Saar's addition to the war cabinet would cause the resignation of Utzma Yudit party head and Minister of National Security Itamar Ben-Gvir, who also demanded to join the war cabinet. And now a midway look at the major news headlines today. Hezbollah drone and missile strike in northern Israel wounds 18 Israelis, including 14 soldiers and 4 civilians. Prime Minister Netanyahu tells visiting foreign ministers from Germany and Britain, urging restraint against responding to Iran. Thanks for the advice, but Israel would make its own decisions. The cabinet approves a 19 billion shekel plan to rebuild communities in the Gaza periphery. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant says that Iranian terror is attempting to reach Judea and Samaria, and the weather much cooler and hazy. 6 months since the October 7th massacre by Hamas, along with the displacement of tens of thousands of Israelis along the borders and subsequent IDF invasion of the Gaza Strip, has seen a huge increase in people seeking help from trauma. One of the centers offering aid is Natal, the Israeli Trauma and Resiliency Center. We spoke with Yifat Morad, head of the International Relations and Development at Natal, about their work.
Natal is a 26-year-old organization. It's an NGO, a totally apolitical organization that was established to give an answer for all those who suffer from symptoms or from PTSD, what we call post-traumatic stress disorder, mm-hmm. due to terror and war and horrible event. For the past 26 years, we've been always there in an emergency event and taking care of the people during the emergency, but also many, many days, months, and years after the event. When the event started on the 7th of October mm-hmm. and the war, we were there as usual. We thought it started with missile attacks. So immediately our helpline, which always ready 24/7, with two volunteers, very sleepy volunteers on a Shabbat morning, yes. or holiday, a very, very relaxed day. And we understood that there is a missile attack. So immediately we call upon a few more volunteers and open and switch to what we call emergency mode, which means that they put the helpline number on television on all the main channels, and we have more volunteers answering the line.
We've been into the war now 6 months, and how can you give us the makeup of the people who are coming to get services with you?
Right now, we are dealing with, we can say, three big groups of people who turn to Natal. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are the people who were living in the area in the south. We're talking about the festivals, you know, Nova Festival, and the parties that were going on over there. And we're talking about the people who were displaced. And right now, we're talking also about the veterans coming back from a deployment mm-hmm. and facing the hardship of going back to routine when the next summon to come back to duty and come back to the military is in the horizon.
Really?
So we are talking about right now with a lot of thousands of people. All of them are citizens, but from different kind of origin that went through the hardship of this war.
Today in the Knesset, there was some testimony from people who were survivors of the Nova, and they said something very interesting. They said that there's been a large number of people who were survivors who committed suicide, over 50 people. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, so the Nova Festival, you know, there were more than 4,000 people at that festival. And what they had to go through is the worst thing ever. Mm-hmm. And there are many, many people who are helping right now to the Nova Festival survivors. One of them is Natal. So Natal was nominated by a group of, you know, some offices of the government and Mifala Pais and other organizations to come and give a service give a few kind of services. One is giving therapy. Another one is giving all kind of intervention like yoga, like art therapy, all kind of things that they can get. Yes, mm-hmm. we understand that they, you know, the more you get, the more you get into the past days and the past months.
Yes,
and not bringing back the hostage, the burden on the mental burden on the survivor is very, very heavy. I never received the data that you're talking about from the official. We are treating at the moment more than 600 people from the Nova wow. Festival. And we hope, and we do hope, and I'm saying that whoever needs help and needs to speak to somebody and needs to give one-on-one therapy, he should seek it. We are in a race now to reach as many people as we can. And not only Natal, by the way. Natal is not doing it alone. There are right. many, many organizations that give this assistance. It's really crucial to be there for those people as fast as possible.
Now, I want to ask you about the veterans. Yeah. You know, Israel's 75 years old, 76 years old, and we've gone through lots of wars, and maybe PTSD wasn't aware in previous generations, but it seems that this group of veterans particularly have a high number of people who are seeking help.
Yes, well, we're talking now about a very different generation. We, you know, Natal was established because of the Yom Kippur War, which mm-hmm. was a horrible event in the life of Israeli state. Back then, you know, they tried to hide the post-trauma and not talk about it.
Right.
If people turned with symptoms like a nightmare, couldn't go back to work, had problems within the relationship in the family, and all kinds of symptoms that they suffered, they told them, you know, go to rest, come back, you'll be fine. Nobody gave it a room. But now it's a different time, you know. Right now, there is a different generation that wants to speak about things. They understand trauma. Mm-hmm. They understand what they need to do, and they're reaching much faster to seek help, and still, the shame and the withdrawal and the hiding is still there. And that's what Natal is, why we are putting a lot of effort to raise awareness, not only for the people who went through it, but also to all their family, the spouses, their children, their parents. They need to be very alert with the symptoms. And that's why it's so important to reach out and get help, either for the helpline or afterwards with different kind of activities, and not, you know, to Natal or other places. The faster you reach and you get help, the better chance that you will not develop.
But I want to ask you about the payment. Is this a free service? Is it subsidized?
So since Natal is an NGO, and we are most of the budget of Natal is until the 7th of October was more than 70% from donation. So yes, most of the services of Natal is totally free. People who reach out and get the help through the helpline don't pay anything. If they get to therapy, they pay a commitment fee of something like 30 shekels, and those who cannot pay it do not pay that also. So, you know, it's most of the services of Natal is totally free. They just need to seek help, and they will get it.
That's fantastic. It seems that you're getting a good look at the slice of Israel that reveals just how sensitive we are. Are we in a national survival mode?
We are in a national survival mode right now. We are a state that need to, we are still on the survival mode, but we also getting into what we call a surviving routine. Now, to be alert all the time, that takes a very heavy toll of all of us. And there is very, very, it's crucial that people will treat themselves, help themselves, and also try to get to some kind of routine. So when we'll get to the next stage of going back to work and bringing up our families, we'll have our children, a generation that seeks hope, that want to have peace and still see things in an optimistic way. Yeah, it's a nation that needs treatment. It's a nation that needs to do a lot of intervention, not necessarily, you know, clinical treatment, mm-hmm. but definitely need to be aware to help ourselves. Emotionally.
Is the fact that Israel's prepared for treating citizens with organizations like Natal a sign of resilience? And how would you compare it with the other countries?
Well, we just went through a miracle event, a shocking event, whatever you call it, this Saturday night.
Right.
I mean, thousands of missiles were, you know, launched by from Iran. And if you're looking at the people, and after going through a very dramatic night, they went in the morning. They woke up in the morning. Most of the people went back to their routine. They, you know, treat their children. They went back to work. Everybody went back to shop. Mm-hmm. people are doing what they are used to do, and this is resiliency. This is a very, and this is something that you invest in for many, many years, but still the toll is there. The aggression, the high alert, the depression, okay? All the things that we see around, it comes with a heavy toll. Yes, we are resilient, mm-hmm. but we need to work on it. It's not something that you do from one day to another. It's something that you invest in it for years. We always say in Natal that we work around the clock in three times mode. We help during emergency, we help after something happened, but 50% of our time we prepare communities to what's going to come.
Mm-hmm.
The more you know about what's going to come, the better you act when it's coming. And I don't think most of the states around us are doing that. We had to do that because it's a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
We are going from one cycle to another. So we are used to prepare. If we know that when people go through some kind of, you know, sirens or an attack, they're going through the three F's, you know, fight, fly, or freeze, they know how they act and they know how to work on it. So they won't freeze when there is a siren and they will go immediately to help themselves. But this is something that you need to educate the people from childhood, from kindergarten, from schools, from the family, the military. You need to do it with everyone. So, yes, I think a lot of states needs to go through it. And this is something that we share, by the way.
Oh, really?
With a lot of communities in the world, yes. Mm. With our friends in Germany, in England, in the States.
Interesting.
Unfortunately, we have to.
That's fantastic. Can you finally just maybe give us some details if someone wants to get in touch with Natal, how they can find it?
So, yes, I think the best thing is to call our helpline, which is the toll-free helpline. And from there, it's just the open gate for lots of services. So it's 1-800-363-363.
Okay, thanks so much for talking to Khan English.
Thank you, and take care.
Okay. Yifat Murad of Natal. And on that note, here's a song by Aya Zahavi Feiglin, Magia Litov, I Deserve Good.
As Passover approaches, families of hostages held in Gaza face the acute pain of their loved ones' absence. In a briefing hosted by Media Central, three grandchildren of elderly hostages spoke about their beloved grandfathers and issued a call for their and other hostages' release. Among those who spoke was Noam Shafir, age 20, of Eilat, whose grandfather, Shlomo Mansour, an 86-year-old Holocaust survivor and the oldest hostage in captivity, was abducted from his kibbutz Kisufim.
I, Noam Safir, am the granddaughter of Shlomo Mansour, the oldest hostage held in Gaza and the only one from Kibbutz Kisufim. Shlomo was born in Iraq in 1938 and is recognized as a Holocaust survivor. During his time in his hometown, when he was only 3 years old, he went through the Farhud massacre of 1941, which was the Iraqi Jews' Holocaust that happened during the Jewish holiday Shavuot. The Nazi anti-Semitism inspired this Holocaust in which the Muslims attacked the Jews by murdering, raping, and slaughtering people, cutting organs of babies, throwing babies into water wells in front of their parents, kidnapping kids and babies, injecting poison into sick Jewish people in hospitals, and more. In this massacre, hundreds of Jews were killed and thousands were injured. In this massacre, the terrorists broke into my grandfather's house and he witnessed as they hit his parents, killed his dog, wrecked his house and took the valuables and skewered the neighbor's baby after playing with him. He himself hid in the roof and cried. On October 7th, he went through a second Holocaust as Hamas terrorists barged into his and his wife's house while shooting the door and the walls and asked for their car keys. Shlomo, my grandfather, was handcuffed, beaten, and kidnapped in his own car from his home while still wearing his sleepwear in front of his wife Mazal, my grandmother, who managed to bravely escape to the neighbor's safe room. Since then, there is no information about his physical and mental state. Shlomo made Aliyah at the age of 13 in 1951 and moved to Kibbutz Kisufim at the age of 16, where he met Mazal and settled down there. He is the oldest sibling of six siblings, the father of five children, and the grandfather of 12 grandchildren. He is a known carpenter at the kibbutz and a very welcoming and loving person. He is the happiest man I know, and I never saw him without a smile on his face. Every time I went with my family to visit our grandparents at the kibbutz, my grandpa was always welcoming us with the widest smile and the biggest hug, always wandering around the kibbutz with us, excited to just be with us and show us around. He was always buying us ice cream and playing with us, making toys for us and creating with us. The last holiday I celebrated with him was Rosh Hashanah, which was in September. And the one thing that I'll be missing this Passover is him. During holiday dinners, he sits at the head of the table and makes sure everyone is well and eating. And if someone seems uncomfortable, he always turns to them and talks with them so that no one would feel alone. I am devastated. My happiness is gone. And there's nothing I fear more than that the happiest man I know would be forever sad when he returns from captivity. My grandfather marked his 86th birthday on March 17th. He is the oldest hostage in captivity. He also missed his 60th wedding anniversary, which was on March 1st. Way back in November, my grandma cried in fear he'll miss their anniversary. And sadly, it has happened. I cry out Shlomo's cry, who's going through this hell all over again. He should live the life he has left to live, surrounded by his loved ones. All I wish is for him and all the other hostages to return home safely. Let our loved ones go. Let my grandpa go. 194 days is too much. They should all be home with their loved ones. I am thanking you for being here and letting me tell the story of my grandfather. Dear Grandpa, please remain hopeful. I hope you are able to spread your light on the darkness around you. I hope we will soon be able to celebrate together.
And that was Noam Safir, granddaughter of the 86-year-old Shlomo Mansour, the oldest hostage in captivity. In the British capital, London, a significant number of demonstrators today stood in Whitehall opposite the gates of the Prime Minister's home in Downing Street alongside a long empty Passover Seder table. On each empty chair, a poster was displayed of one of the hostages kidnapped on October 7th. The fully decorated table included all the traditional Pesach items, including wine and matzah, and a few words about the missing hostage. Our London correspondent, Jerry Lewis, had a word with Britain's chief rabbi, Ephraim Mervis, who spoke earlier at the demonstration.
Chief Rabbi, this is a very unique occasion. How much could you think it could do to persuade the situation in the Middle East to change?
Every single one of us has a responsibility to do whatever we can to help the hostages who are so cruelly being held in captivity in Gaza right now. To see this Seder table outside Downing Street, on any other year we would have celebrated such a phenomenon, but this year our hearts are broken. We're part of one global mishpacha, one global Jewish family, and the pain of those who are missing runs very deeply within all of our hearts, and please God, they should come home soon.
The politicians have had a difficult time recently. Have you had much contact with senior members of the government and opposition to discuss what's happened over the last few days?
The leadership of our community are continuously in contact with whoever we can speak to. It is our responsibility, and we will not tire until the situation becomes much better.
And what is the ask of the Jewish community around the world with regard to the Seder night?
Let's celebrate, and also let's be filled with sorrow. Let's recognize these mixed emotions that we have, and let us be positively minded to pray that Almighty God will bless us with much better times in the future.
Chief Rabbi, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
And before the crowd dispersed, they were invited to join in singing. The Seder table was subsequently removed to the Jewish Arts and Cultural Center in Hampstead, where it will be on display for the duration of the Passover festival. And that was brought to us from our London correspondent, Jerry Lewis. And taking us up to return headlines is this song by Jane Bordeaux, Close Dancing, Rikudim Tzmudim.
כמו בריכת גלים ללא מעצים שמעתי שיבוא מקווה שבא לבד וחברות רוקדות הלב שלי עומד בצד רוק נזרוני הוא מסתכל עליי עוד הם דובדב אני נופרים כמו כוכבים רוק נזרוני הוא מסובב אותי הכל מימיים פתאום נגמר שיר
Taking a look at the weather, and it will be much cooler tomorrow and more humid and hazy. Friday, colder with seasonable temperatures. Temperatures forecast for tonight and tomorrow, Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, 18 to 25, Haifa, 19 to 25, Tzfat, 18 to 24, Tiberias, 17 to 33, Beersheba, 20 to 29, and in Eilat, from 21 tonight, going up to 36 degrees centigrade tomorrow. Now another look at our major news headlines. A Hezbollah drone and missile strike in northern Israel, wounding 18 Israelis, including 14 soldiers and 4 civilians. Prime Minister Netanyahu tells visiting foreign ministers urging restraint against a response to Iran. Thanks for the advice, but Israel would make its own decisions. Cabinet approves a 19 billion shekel plan to rebuild communities in the Gaza periphery. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant says that Iranian terror is attempting to reach Judea and Samaria. And the weather, much cooler and hazy. That's the news. Join us again tomorrow night at 8 p.m. on Kan Reka, the foreign languages channel of the Israeli Public Broadcasting Corporation. Watch our 2 p.m. news flash on the Kan English Facebook page, or you can write to us at kanenglish@kan.org.il. Together with sound engineer Michael Oshvan, this is Aryeh O'Sullivan wishing you a good evening and shalom from Jerusalem.